Hi, welcome to another AusSham Beijing podcast. Today, we are joined by James Wall, Managing Director of Financial Institutions Group for the Commonwealth Bank of Australia. And between Nick Coyle and myself, we are here to get an update for AusSham Beijing podcast subscribers from CBA in China. So James, I understand that last week there was an investment seminar held in Beijing by the Commonwealth Bank of Australia. Could you please give us more insight into the seminar and some of the outcomes?
So CBA, in conjunction with Bank of China, as a partnership we've been running for a number of years, held an investment seminar here in Beijing. With the imminent signing of the free trade agreement and the level of interest that's created in cross-border investment, we're seeing a huge amount of interest coming from investors here in China and also from Australian investors looking at what opportunities the free trade agreement is going to create. So the purpose of the seminar was to highlight how to go about investment in Australia, what the framework is for dealing with Foreign Investment Review Board, how structures are put together, and then to talk about some of the key areas of interest on the back of the free trade agreement. We've seen a lot of interest in commercial property in Australia running into this period, and we think that is continuing to be a very strong area of interest from the Chinese investors. There's also a lot of talk about investment in agriculture, although that's a slightly more restricted area even under the free trade agreement. We do see that there is a very strong level of interest in the sort of food security and the ongoing investment around production out of Australia. One of the interesting things that came out of it was that it's cheaper to actually grow beef in Australia. It's higher quality than they can actually raise cattle and put them on the table here in China. So they're certainly highlighting their opportunities across border that we hadn't sort of really been aware of in terms of the competitive advantage Australia has around the agricultural space. The other areas where we see a lot of interest and a lot of inquiries still coming out is around the resources sector. Even though we've seen a slowing of the economy here in China and a slowdown in Australia, the falling commodity prices and the view that long-term they're good assets to hold continues to be an interest and something of a topic that the Chinese investors are looking at as well.
Can I ask a follow-up on that? With the resources sector, do you think that's a case of there's some good cheap assets out there, or is it really a case of Chinese companies looking at a long play that they think that there's still a lot of growth left?
I think there's a couple of factors that say there's some cheap assets out there right now. And it's curious to see who is actually looking.
Yeah.
And you'd sort of put it out, the smart money is looking at the moment. So we're seeing a lot of US PE companies or the financial sponsors having a look at assets in Australia in the commodity space, where they are leaders in this field, they're well experienced in investing in natural resources, they're seeing opportunities in Australia. The Australian dollar has fallen considerably over this period of time. While you've seen a fall of commodity prices, that's depressing valuations of the companies, you've also seen a fall in the Australian dollar. So net-net, for an offshore investor, the Australian market is looking very cheap. And if you believe that there is a bottoming out of the commodity prices sort of around here, I think, there may be more downside, but net of net, it probably looks like a good investment opportunity for a longer-term growth play.
And what are CBA saying to people who are holding, RMB at the moment? Would you swap them for Aussie dollars at the moment, or would you hold them?
Interesting.
It's a common question.
Very common question. I would say that looking at the fundamentals that are driving the pressure on the Australian dollar, I don't think they've finished. So I would speculate that there is, and I say the word speculate because I don't know for sure, that there's further downside pressure on the Australian dollar as opposed to upside. We've had a temporary reprieve due to Yellen's delay in the rate hike in the US, although I would say it's temporary, that eventually the US, the economy is growing. They've held off because of global pressure, but sooner or later they're going to raise rates for December or early January. When that occurs, that'll continue to place pressure on the interest rate differential and place pressure on the Australian dollar. The RMB has devalued slightly, but a 4% devaluation of the RMB compared to a 30 or 40% devaluation of the Australian dollar, I don't think Australian dollar could fall another 5 or 10%. the RMB is not going to be allowed to fall that much, so it's probably not the right time to be making that switch, would be my personal view.
How is that interpreted back home? Maybe it wasn't a surprise devaluation, but certainly 2 days in a row surprised a few people. How was that interpreted back home?
I think it was seen as I think you need to qualify it, because for the general public, the RMB in Australia is probably in the category of an exotic currency. If you're in the trade-related activities, and we see our business as being primarily focused around working with customers and our clients on the cross-border trade and investment flows. So we have a heightened awareness of the RMB. But for the general public and the general investor public, RMB is not particularly or a currency of focus for them. I think the adjustment of the RMB was seen as, in context of a lot of the devaluations we've seen in the Japanese yen and other currencies in this region, was seen as a move to help address some of the slowdown in the Chinese economy. Nothing significant, a very small move in the scheme of things, and a signal that the government was trying to react to and help stabilise the broader economy here in China.
And because I think at the time, a lot of Australian media were looking at the big sell-off we had in the Shanghai Composite here, and then on top of that we had the intervention from the government and the devaluation of the currency. That played into this idea that China was somehow on the precipice of a very significant economic correction. Is CBA a lot more positive than the media of China, about the China story?
I'd say CBA has a positive outlook towards the opportunity in China. I think you need to look at the market in context of what those moves mean in terms of the broader economy. The long-term story and the fundamentals in China are still very sound. The growth opportunity and the importance of China for the Australian economic growth cannot be understated. So I think we're inextricably linked in terms of the trade and the investment that goes between the two countries. So you can't ignore it. From a CBA perspective, when you start to look at the business that we do here, it's very much about trade and our customers selling products into this market and supporting customers who are buying products from China. The Shanghai Index itself was something that we probably underestimated the impact of those moves. I would say that when you pulled apart how much real investment was in that market versus, say, the Hong Kong Index or the others, it is a small part, and the granularity of the investor base and that shouldn't have a broad impact on the economy. We had seen similar moves in 2008, so it didn't alarm us in terms of the overall reaction from the initial reaction from the market. What was surprising was the impact on consumer confidence, and it probably just signals a greater awareness this time around in 2015 versus 2008 for the general public in China, and the more awareness of investment. And we think that as the Chinese economy has been trying to shift more towards a consumer-based economy as part of the government plan, a dent in consumer confidence driven by this type of event had a bigger impact than we thought. That said, then we looked at the data that came out in August from the statistics released from the government. We see there's no impact on consumer confidence. PPI is down a bit, consumer confidence is up, or CPI is up. So there's a little bit of a mix, and I think you've got to start to pull that apart a bit as well and see what's driving it. So we look and say that fundamentally there's a slowdown occurring in China. It's not unexpected. In an economy of this size and in the growth we've been seeing, we expect to see some adjustments occurring. But long term, there's still a very, very sound economy here. There's enough depth in terms of the government's levers and tools they have at their disposal to right the market. But seeing a bit of correction is probably a very healthy thing.
Now, you mentioned CBA's primary role here in terms of that investment trade facilitation. one of the questions that I know I get asked from time to time is about your RMB capabilities. Mm-hmm. So what are they and what does that mean for business, you know, for your customers?
So you pull that into two pieces. Outside of China, we have a full RMB capability, and we could offer, you know, RMB from hedging, spot forwards, full range of capabilities across the RMB. Here in China, we currently have a restricted license under the rules. So we can take deposits and do spot FX in China. Outside of China, we can do whatever, you know, everything you like. So, yeah, that probably, at this point in time, works well for us because our business here is around partnerships. So for our customers outside Australia, we can service all their needs, and if they receive RMB in terms of trade flow or trade receipt, or we have a customer from China looking to invest into Australia and they want to use RMB as that investment currency, we can hedge, we can, you know, do all the forwards and risk mitigation around that. Here in China, we currently are limited, but because we work on a partnership basis and we're supporting, we typically have a partnership or collaboration with one of the strong banks here, and they're capable of providing all those services to our customers and our clients anyway. So it's not a hindrance in terms of facilitating and supporting our clients' activities. We'd obviously like to do more, but yeah, it's not a handbrake on our growth and our support of customers at this point in time.
Okay. How about we ask, obviously we've had a little bit of leadership instability in Australia, and it'd be remiss if not to ask something about it, but we've got a new treasurer back in Australia, Scott Morrison. Mm-hmm. Impressions and...
I think we'll start with the leader, probably.
Yeah.
I think the polls and the general response has been reasonably positive. I think, you know, reading that into it, that is a good thing. You know, I don't have an opinion on Tony Abbott or Malcolm in terms of Turnbull, in terms of their ability as politicians, but I do see the impact in terms of the poll. And I think Australia is, having worked and lived in a lot of places around the world, Australia is a fairly unique place in its ability to bash itself up. We've got a great economy, a great legal and parliamentary system that supports growth. We have incredible institutions from terms of the health, insurance, superannuation, finance, all these areas. We have an incredible sort of structure to our economy that we only ever seem to see the bad side of it. We have a lot of like all doom and gloom that always runs through the discussions, or maybe it's the media, I should say. So to turn that around and produce some a higher level of confidence, I think, is very good for the economy. And you know, you would like to have seen it, you know, under either leader, but you know, we are seeing a bit of confidence at the moment. If that can continue into the Treasury role.
Well, the new PM came out and said that he was going to be very pro-business.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a sense of what he meant by that?
I think you need to remember that within Australia, we have a Westminster parliamentary system. So what the Prime Minister says really needs to be ratified and supported by the party. He's a spokesperson for the party, and he should be voicing the opinion of the party. So it always needs to be in context of what do you think the Liberal Party represents and is putting forward at the time. Pro-business is a very positive thing in terms of growth in the economy. How that translates, we're yet to see legislation, we're yet to see any tangible sort of initiatives on the table. But to signal that he's keen to see growth in the business community, which should translate into further jobs and support for growth in the economy, you'd have to be very cynical to not think that's a good thing for Australia.
Okay. And I was going to ask one question about CHAFTA, because through our work that we do here, we do quite a lot of work with Chinese government officials, and it's certainly been remarked on more than one occasion about there's a high sense of awareness of some of the ads that have been run and anti-CHAFTA that the CMFEU ran, some of the views put forward by members of the opposition, and I think it has probably, with that, on an official level here, made a difference. You know, back in Australia, are people concerned that this thing's not going to get ratified? Is it all politics?
A very curly question.
You can avoid it if you like, it's all right.
No, look, I think that we shouldn't avoid it, because this is an important thing in terms of growth for Australia. We do think that foreign investment in Australia is important for underpinning the growth in the economy, that investment into our businesses and job creation, it benefits all of Australia. There are certain elements, obviously, of the free trade agreement that have become the focus, and there's two sides to that discussion. I think, you know, to really have an opinion, you need to sit down and actually read the document and look at the legislation. And the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade has put out a good paper that talks about the myths around the free trade agreement. So I would suggest that's a good starting point for anyone asking the opinion. Obviously, if I looked at the ads were very much around positioning against Abbott. So I feel that maybe there was an element of politicking in the campaign itself as a way to destabilise him in his position. But we have not seen the legislation passed. We have not seen what actually gets ratified. But I would hope that the essence of trying to promote investment into Australia and job creation and the preservation of our existing immigration laws around importing, you know, the 457 visas and the likes, which we already have in place, remain part of the free trade agreement. And I think we've operated well under that regime, and we'll continue to operate well with a free trade agreement that doesn't sweep aside the existing framework for employment. I'm not the expert on it. I think that, yeah, looking to the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade or reading the document itself would be the best point to get a real hard view on that.
Yeah, we've certainly put out a fairly strong statement after going through the whole of the agreement on our end, and it's, you know, it's obviously from a business perspective here in China, we absolutely want to see it ratified as quickly as possible. So James, you mentioned commercial property, agriculture, and resources. Are there other areas in CHAPTA that you see that there's a lot of opportunity?
Yeah, I think, you know, those three areas are the ones at the highest profile at the point in time. But if I look at what I think the real sleeper, the real massive benefit for Australia is around the free trade agreement, it's around the health and services area. If you look at the demographics and the changes in the in China that are going on today and will unfold over the next sort of generation or so, the need for health cover, the need for aged care facilities and the likes is going to be huge. Australia has an incredibly well-developed aged care ecosystem, if you want to call it anything else, through the hospitals, through the service providers, through the aged care facilities and operating and managing those, understanding what goes into making a successful facility. That's something Australia's been doing well for a number of years. Here in China, given the predominance of multi-family dwellings where you'll have, you know, grandparents, parents, children all under the one house, that's changing. As China becomes more urban, people drift towards the cities, accommodation in the cities is very tight. So the ability for you to house your family, your parents or grandparents in your dwelling is becoming pressured. So the need for retirement living and retirement dwelling in China is going to be a massive market. Australia has a great position in this area. It has strongly developed operating systems and technologies in terms of making it work. And I think that's a big, big opportunity for Australian operators. Stepping into operating, managing and running hospitals here is a very big opportunity. And companies like Ramsay Healthcare are already sort of seeking to move on that initiative. We've seen some of the large private equity companies invest into health services in Australia. Healthscope acquisition was one of those. They're taking that that IP and exporting it into markets across Asia. And we think China is the one of the bigger opportunities in terms of health and services. The other area where I think is going to benefit strongly out of the free trade agreement is financial services. And in that, I probably mean more around wealth preservation and insurance, other than banking, because we've seen a generational shift in China where within a very short period of time, you know, 40 years, we've seen incredible wealth generated, and the families and the people who've created that wealth are going to want to hold on to that. So they're going to be interested in how do I create a generational shift, and the wealth and capital I've accumulated in my lifetime to my children. So life insurance products, health insurance, so that you can maintain your health for a longer and you're not a burden for your children in your old age. So retirement savings products, pension planning and things like that. And then just general wealth advice and wealth accumulation, like how do I shift from being having all my capital tied up into having investments instead of having businesses. And that's something which is going to, I think, continue to unfold as that the Chinese population and this economic miracle that's occurred here continues to grow.
James, thank you very much for joining us for another AusChem Beijing podcast.
Thank you.